Good morning, everyone. The topic for the next half hour or so is going to be I/O workloads and storage in virtualized cloud data centers. And this work is done together with Robert Birke, Lydia Chen, and Ton Emberson at the IBM Research Lab in Zurich, and Evgenia Smirny at the College of William and Mary. So for data center providers who offer cloud services, it's essential to be able to use the resources in an efficient manner without compromising the performance. And today, the key technology to be able to do this is virtualization. So this enables us to share the resources in an efficient manner and do it in a cost-efficient way. So from a data management perspective, we need to keep the data at the right place at the right time, and from the performance point of view, this is especially important during the peak loads. And we need to understand from a virtual machine perspective how the I/O workloads and storage demands looks like and how they are related to the similar requirements on the physical layer. So there's been already a lot of work on like file systems and storage from a storage point of view, but we still don't know all that much on how these I/O and storage workloads behave in virtualized data centers, and especially at the large scale and from the perspective of the VM and how how they depend on the physical boxes on which the VMs run. In particular, we're interested in the following aspects. So the growth and the churn rates of the volume, so how does the capacity vary over time, like in the long term, and also how does the data change, so what's the churn rate of the volumes. From a performance point of view, we're looking at the I/O velocity of reads and writes, and here again we try to look at the perspective of the VM and compare how do the reads and writes on the virtual machine layer compared to the ones that we observe at the physical layer. And finally, we try to look at the variety of applications that run in these cloud data centers, and especially how do the I/O and storage workloads depend on or how are they correlated with demands for other resources in the system, such as the CPU and the network demands. So the outline for the rest of this talk, first we'll give a bit more introduction and look at the data collection on which we base our analysis. Then we'll look at these three aspects of the I/O and storage workload, so the volume, the velocity, and the variety. And finally, we have a summary and hopefully some conclusions. So this is a characterization study. So we look at field data from production data centers that operate under the private cloud paradigm over a period of 3 years. And as I mentioned, we look at these three aspects, so the volume, we look at the allocated space, the free space, and the degree of fullness, so how much storage capacity do the VMs have in these data centers, how much of this capacity is actually used, and what are like long-term trends and the short-term variations. From the performance point of view, we want to look at the reads and writes, both in operations and bytes per time unit, so we look at the IOPS and gigabytes per hour, and try to compare the virtual and the physical I/O and see how they are related. And finally, from a variety point of view, we want to look at what are some representative VM workloads and how do the requirements from the I/O and storage perspective relate to the requirements for other system resources. So the data collection that we based this study on, from the storage point of view, at the end of this 3-year study period, the virtual machines that we have observed have storage capacity up to 22 petabytes. And there's also like, a lot of machines here. So, 8,000 physical machines, on top of which there are 90,000 virtual machines running. And this time period is then 3 years, so up to the end of 2013. So in these data centers, there's over 300 corporate customers, and the virtual machines are typically running Windows, but there's also different flavors of Linux and Unix. And running on top of VMware virtualization. So here we, in the first graph, show the number of file systems for VMs and boxes. And we, overall in this slide, try to emphasize that we're really looking at a heterogeneous environment. So if we look at here on the first graph, the blue curve here at the top shows the number of file systems for virtual machines. And we see that for a bit less than half of the VMs, they only have a single file system, but there is a tail, and there's virtual machines that have tens of file systems. For the physical boxes, there are only a small number of boxes that actually only have a single file system, whereas they typically have tens or even hundreds of file systems. In the following two graphs, we look at the number of file systems as a function of the number of CPUs and the memory size. And here, again, if we look at it from a heterogeneity point of view, we see that the virtual machines typically have from 1 up to 16 CPUs, whereas the number for boxes is like from 2 up to 96. And for the memory size, we can also see like a similar pattern that there's a very large range for the VMs and the boxes. And then, so these box plots show the 10th, 50th, and the 90th percentile of the observed values. And the general trend is here that the number of file systems grows with the size of the boxes and the VMs. So the more CPUs, the more memory you have, typically the more file systems those VMs and boxes have. And I'd further like to emphasize that in this study, we're really looking at it at the data from a virtual machine perspective instead of the file system perspective. And one reason or a few reasons behind that is the data collection. So we use data that has been obtained by standard utilities at the operating system level. So from we don't have specific information about the file systems, for example, the type and the file counts and so on. And also the granularity of the trace data is a limiting factor. So for the finest granularity is 15-minute or hourly periods, which means that we cannot observe I/O peaks within such intervals. But on the other hand, we do have a fairly large data set, so hopefully this will then contrast the coarseness of the information. So moving on to the first part of the analysis, we look at the yearly growth rate per VM storage volume. And this graph shows the yearly growth rate of the VM storage volume from the June 2012 until May 2013. And the blue curve here at the top shows the capacity for the VMs. And what we can see here is that the majority of VMs actually don't upgrade their storage during this time period. So over 80% of the VMs have the capacity more or less unchanged, whereas there is quite a long tail, and there are some VMs that actually have increased their storage capacity by over 200%. If we look at the two other curves, the used space and the fullness, which is actual amount of space that has been used by the VMs, we see that these curves fairly closely follow each other. So this would indicate that the storage capacity utilization is more driven by data demand rather than the supply of capacity. And also what we can see here is that there are actually some number of VMs that actually have decreased the use space that they are actually utilizing. So the yearly growth rate gives more an indication of more like long-term trends and how the capacity of the VMs evolve. If we try to look at the like more shorter term and look at the data, how does the data in these VMs changes? So we have a lower bound on the weekly churn rate, which we define as the sum of all the observed drops in used space divided by the used space. And why this is a lower bound is because, as I mentioned before, a limitation in our data that we only have the used space at every 15-minute intervals. So that means that we cannot observe any changes that have occurred within this interval. So for instance, if you delete some data and then you re-add the data or some other data is added in its place, then we actually don't observe these drops. So that's why we only have a lower bound here. And we calculate the churn rate per VM and per file system. So in this graph, we show the weekly churn rate for both VMs and file systems, and the leftmost values here show that the churn rate for a number of both VMs and file systems, there are VMs and file systems that have quite low churn rates, and for VMs it's a bit less than 40%, and for file systems it's close to 80% of the file systems that have like very low churn rates. But on the other hand, there is here also quite long tails, even more so for the file systems, that there are file systems that have really very large churn rates. So the means that we calculate for the churn rates are around 18% for the VMs and 21% for the file systems. And since this is a lower bound, we find that this is on par with the previous results. Wallace et al. In FAST 2012 showed a churn rate of 21%, so our lower bound is on par with this. And well, the overall observation is that file systems typically have higher churn variability and higher average churn rate than the virtual machines. So moving on to the velocity, and from the performance point of view, we're interested in how much I/O the VMs and the boxes have. So in this first graph, we're comparing the I/O activity in gigabytes per hour for virtual machines and boxes. And the main observation we can make here is that the I/O activity for boxes typically is much higher than for virtual machines. It's actually a factor of 9, which is on par with the average consolidation level of 10 VMs per box. The next graph, we look at the I/O activity as a function of the virtualization level. And here we see that the I/O grows almost linearly with the virtualization level, meaning that the more VMs you provision on a single physical box, the higher the I/O is going to be. And finally, we try to look at how the I/O differs in the ratio of reads and writes, and what we can observe is that for virtual machines, the ratio is higher in terms of writes than for the physical boxes. And what we've shown actually on these three graphs is three curves for VMs and three for boxes. And what we try to look here is if there's a difference between a weekday value or for the weekend or for the monthly average. And what we see is that these curves are very close to each other, and then for subsequent analysis we're going to use actually just the data from a single day, from the Wednesday on April 17th of last year. So next we try to look at the amplification and duplication ratio to see what's the relationship between IOs that are observed on the virtual machine layer compared to the ones on the physical layer. And the amplification or deduplication ratio here is defined as the number of virtual IOPS divided by the number of physical IOPS. And for values larger than 1, we have deduplication, meaning that for each virtual IO, we have less than 1 physical IO. And on the other hand, if the ratio is less than 1, then we have amplification. So for each virtual IO, there's actually more than 1 physical IO. The observations we can make here is that roughly 50% of the boxes have ratios between 0.8 and 1.2, so indicating that there's roughly the same amount of virtual and physical IOs. Whereas on the other hand, if we look at the actual number of boxes that have either amplification or deduplication, we see that most boxes have some degree of amplification. On the second graph here, we look at the difference between read and write operations, and especially from the deduplication point of view, we see that for for boxes, it's more common to have read deduplication in the case that there is actually some deduplication. So we have around 30% read deduplication, whereas only 20% of the boxes experiencing write deduplication. So the take-home message from this would be that we mostly observe amplification, and in case we do have deduplication, it's more common to have it for read operations. Still looking a bit more into the deduplication ratios, we try to see how it differs by virtualization level and by memory size. So first, by virtualization level, we see that the deduplication ratios typically increase with the virtualization level, so meaning that the more VMs that you have on a box, the higher the potential to have some deduplication in the I/O operations. And often the effect of I/O deduplication is also dependent on the cache size, and we don't have information about the cache sizes here, but memory sizes and cache sizes are often positively correlated, so we look at the I/O deduplication ratio as a function of the memory size, and here we can also see that typically the more memory you have on a box, the higher the deduplication ratio for I/Os. So yeah, the deduplication ratio typically increases both with the virtualization level and with the memory size. So from an I/O performance perspective, it's very important to be able to have good performance at the peak loads. And from the data center operator's point of view, rather than having to optimize the I/O for all the VMs that run in the data center, we look if there is a way to simplify this to only optimize the load for like a smaller set of the total number of VMs. So what we did here is we look at the top VM contributors, which are defined as the VMs that contribute most to the peak load. And we try to see how many VMs does it typically take to reach 80% of the peak loads. And what we see is that there's actually only a small number of VMs that dominate these peak loads. So it's the average consolidation level is to have 10 VMs running on a single physical box. We see that it's only around one-third of these that really contribute the most to the peak load. So for data center operators, they could then only focus on optimizing the I/O of these few VMs, and then that could bring already a big benefit to the I/O performance at the peak loads. So yeah, the take-home message is a few VMs only are responsible for the peak loads. And finally, looking at the variety, we try to identify like what are some typical VM workloads in terms of I/O, and also then how they use CPU and network, these other system resources. And the way we went about it, we looked at the daily averages for I/O, CPU, and network usage, and we performed k-means clustering to see what are the representative VM workloads. And the idea behind is that if you know what are some typical VM workloads, then it can help you to run like simulations or to otherwise dimension your data center in terms of catering to these typical VM workloads. So we tried to look at, for clusters. We tried between 3 and 20 clusters, and here we present 5 of them. When we tried to add more clusters, we actually saw that this results in more data points between the two lowest clusters here in the graph. So this is like the 3D plot for all these three resources, the I/O, the CPU, and network. And to make it a bit more clear what's going on, we in this next two graphs project the results of the I/O and CPU and I/O network onto these two planes. And first, in the top graph, we look at the I/O workloads, and we see that they increase exponentially with the CPU utilization. So there is a similar trend for the I/O network, but it's less clear. And we also have here at the far right an outlier where there is a lot of network activity, but not so much I/O. And what we can see by looking at the data points with the highest number of I/O is that very I/O-intensive VMs typically utilize the CPU a lot, but they don't utilize the network all that much. But in general, the majority of the VMs have I/O that increases with CPU and network usage. To take another perspective on the variety and the dependency between the I/O workloads and the other resources, we compute the correlation coefficients for the I/O, the CPU, and the network usage pairwise here, and we see that the highest correlation coefficients are for I/O and CPU, and this is like in line with what we saw in the clustering results in the past few slides. For the I/O network and the network CPU pairs, we observe that both VMs and boxes demand both of these resources in a similar manner. And if we then compare the values for the boxes with the VMs, we can see that for the correlation coefficients are slightly lower for boxes than for VMs. So to summarize, we performed a characterization study using field data from private cloud data centers over a period of 3 years. We analyzed storage data of the virtual machines from these three different aspects: volume, velocity, and variety. From the volume perspective, the main observations were that the storage capacity increases yearly, but the fullness actually remains constant. And the weekly churn rate for VMs was around 18%. From the velocity point of view, we see that VMs have more write-intensive I/O than boxes, and the total box I/O and the I/O deduplication ratio increases with the virtualization level. And from the performance point of view, the peak loads are contributed to by a small number of VMs. In the variety, the I/O of most VMs increases with the increase of CPU and network usage. And overall, we can see that the degree of virtualization seems to highly affect both the storage and the I/O workloads. So that concludes my talk, and I'll be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Well, do you have a breakdown between through deduplication, meaning different VMs reading the same data, versus caching effects, meaning one VM rereading the same data? Because it seems to me that what you describe as deduplication is actually a combination of both.
Yeah, that's true. We don't have, in this data set, we cannot differentiate between caching effects or true deduplication effects. So it's only, we see the total number of IOs at the virtual machine level and then compare them to the ones at the physical layer, and then where this like deduplication or caching happens, we can't say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Fred Douglas, EMC. So with respect to churn, you compare yourself to the paper from Wallace et al. 2012, which I co-authored, and that was about backup workloads. And so which you note in your paper, I noticed, but you didn't say in the talk, so when you say that you're consistent with prior work that says that around a 20% churn rate is you know, you're in the same ballpark, since it's really kind of apples and oranges, the backup workloads is because data is being explicitly deleted and replaced at regular intervals, and it's a completely different workload. I'm curious if you've thought about whether this is actually consistent with other primary workloads.
Yeah, that's a good question. So we did look, we didn't present it here, we did look also at like different, or try to see how the behavior varies from different applications, and I mean we don't know exactly what VM is running which application. So the way we deduced it is just by the naming, for instance, of the file system or the storage volumes. Yeah, that's a good point. I think we need to maybe take it offline. I'll check with my colleague. Good, thank you.
Okay. You're Dong Yang from University of Nebraska Lincoln, and I have a question. Do you have some data about the LoveVM migration? Because in data center, migration is a common task for load balance and some maintenance work. So I'm wondering if you have some data about the frequency of data VM migration in data center.
So in this paper we do, again, that's not presented here, I believe it's on the poster, so if you come to the poster session this evening, we did look at how the peak load varies over time, and we see that there's a lot of peaks around midnight, which are consistent with prior work that this could be like VM migrations, but apart from that, we don't like have any more specific details about what like when the migrations actually occur or so.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Christos Karamanolis, VMware. I have a couple of questions and hopefully a few answers. First of all, how did you measure the what you call a virtual I/O? Did you use the virtual SCSI interface to keep your statistics there, or did you measure those from within the virtual machine operating system?
So, we didn't collect this data ourselves, and what we the data that we got it's collected at the virtual machine operating system level, but for more details I would have to check and get back to you.
Because that would be very, very important. It would make a huge difference for your data. For one, you asked about, there was the open question of what are the caching effects. Actually, assuming that you're using ESX, there is no caching whatsoever, either read caching or write buffering in the hypervisor. So that amplification or the duplication is actually pretty mysterious to me. So if there is anything like that, those are going to be side effects of buffering in the guest operating system in the VM. Except if, which I very much doubt from what I saw, you're using a virtual desktop product, what's called the VMware View, which actually uses a content addressable in-memory read cache on the host, in which case, yes, you would see a huge deduplication of reads. Actually, I would expect much more than 90% of the reads to hit that in-memory cache on the client being the host where the VM runs. So some of those experimental methodology questions will be very important to clarify. The other question I haven't, maybe I missed that, what is the storage do you use? Is that fiber channel block storage? Is it storage behind an IP network, iSCSI or NFS? Can you clarify on that?
I'm not sure it's clear from our data. I can try to have a look and maybe get back to you later this evening in the poster session, but I'm not sure we know that from our data.
Because then that's the other interesting part of your presentation was the correlation of CPU utilization and I/O and networking. So obviously, if your storage is behind is iSCSI or NFS, you have a huge, obviously correlation because you use the network to do your I/O. So those are, again, very fundamental questions to answer so that we can understand and interpret some of these results.
Yeah, so
I'll be happy to come by and talk to you guys at the poster session.
Yeah, so, well, from the physical machines, we don't know what the file system are, if they are local or remote file systems. So maybe that also already partially answers your question.
I guarantee you, if those are production systems, that was not a local file system.
Yeah.
It was a storage area network or an NFS storage service.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I just had one question I wanted to ask before we move on. Do you have plans to make your trace data available?
Unfortunately, this time we can't make this data available.
All right, thank you. Yeah. If we can thank the speaker again.